Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are at a minute past the hour on this, the fourth day of November 2016. Friday on the front porch, the first of November 2016, and the last before what may be an apocalyptic election day come this Tuesday. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that is where you go if you'd like to be part of the real-time, madcap, merry, zany, wacky, multimedia real-time conversation that takes place during the live hours of the program in the chat room. If you go to headonradionetwork.com and you click on chat room and you pick yourself out a screen name and a password and you jump in, you will immediately be met and greeted by Jug of Punch and Laborman, Steve from Georgistan, VT Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has been pleased this evening to fold space to become Man Cave. Yes, indeed. We are a listener supported broadcast operation, and we didn't quite make it all the way to our fundraising goal last night. So tonight's fundraising goal, to the best of my ciphering ability, is $255. That's 10 at $25.50, or 25 and a half people at $10. That's gonna be a little complicated. Or one at $255, or let's see, two at $127.50, and now we're into those confounded odd numbers, and it becomes a real pain in the ass. Yes, thank you very much for keeping this program on the air. Thank you very much indeed. Okay, recalculating. No, we 205. So we did knock down last night. I just hadn't seen it. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thanks, Anatole. Who are you, Mr. Bob? I'm Bob Kincaid. And it's Friday on the front porch, and hopefully we'll do all of the fundraising that we need to do this evening and stay even. And that way we'll go into the second full week of November without a great big nasty fundraising hole. Because that just makes things considerably easier. And of course, here in about 55 minutes or so, we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. That, of course, is what happens on Friday on the front porch. Every Friday, come one, come all, and we'll talk about whatever you've got on your mind, whatever it is that you think needs discussing. Okay. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, you are more than welcome so to do. Among other things, it just makes for a rousing conversation in a way that doesn't happen anywhere else that I'm aware of. Because we try to do things here differently than anyone else does them. So, So if you've never participated before, just send a get on Skype. Okay, this is easy. It's easier than it sounds. Get on Skype. Send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk. One word. And then and let him know that, you know, this is for Friday. Put FOTFP or Friday on the Front Porch or the Horn or something like that, so Sparky knows you're not just some spammer. And then he'll show you the breadcrumb trail into the chat room. And he'll point you and he'll point up in the sky, and you can see the Bob signal flashing now off the clouds. Okay? If you cannot work Skype at all, no how, no way, then by all means, you're free to use the stress line. 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. Okie doke. And pretty much we're rocking and ready to go then. And it is an extraordinary little exercise. By the way, there are offers on the table that are quickly going away for new subscribers. Between now and Election Day, the Election Day is the last day. Every new subscriber gets their first month's subscription bumped by $11, courtesy of Ralph's, in honor of the 11th anniversary of this little radio network. Thank you, Ralph's. Thank you so very, very much. And on top of it, you'll also get an extra $5 on your first month's subscription, courtesy of Tracy, the lady cab driver in Southern California, somewhere on the 6 7/8 or the 5 3/16, as she wends her way about the mad traffic world of Southern California and the Los Angeles area generally. And that is for 10 people between now and a week from now, the 11th of November. Okay, 10 people can get... If you're new, but this is for new subscribers. And of course, new subscribers, I periodically sit down and fill out envelopes and address envelopes and send out bumper stickers. And I'm probably going to do that this weekend. Send out some more to new subscribers. You get, if you do $10, you get a horn bumper sticker. If you do $10 or $20, you get a horn bumper sticker and a classic, you can't get it anywhere but here. They Want It All bumper sticker, both contributed kindly by our buddy Scott, who has recently returned with his beloved bride, Brigitte, from a slowpoke road trip all over the western portion of the European continent. Thank you, Scott. Even the postage. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you, Tracy. And thank you, Horn Family Community Congregation, for keeping all of this going, because, you know, at any given moment, we're 1 month away from me standing in Walmart saying, "Welcome to Walmart, I love you," and thus, no, I appreciate it very much. So, subscribers, I mean, we do everything we can to make subscribing something fun and easy. Okay? And to do it, all you got to do is go to headonradionetwork.com, click on Contribute, fill out the fields, leave the ones blank about what you do and where you do it, and why you do it, or if you do it, or whatever, and put in the money amount, and just click Make This a Recurring Monthly Donation, and boom, done. And it's just that easy. For those of you who prefer the U.S. Postal Service, of course, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Okay? And checks and money orders made payable to The Horn. And let me know that it's on the way, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne to keep an eye out. He'll be, as a matter of fact, probably going to the...
going to the post office, the box. It's not the post office. He'll be going to the box tomorrow. He'll probably leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck because I know there's a couple of envelopes in the echo chamber. But he'll probably take, maybe a nice three foot length of rebar with him in case he runs into a member of the Klan, because the Klan gets their mail there too, because West Virginia, because UPS, because the Klan has a right to do business just like anybody else, even though they're a domestic terror organization. Right. I'm happy to be here this evening. I was beginning to wonder last night if I was going to be, because some sort of gigantic, hateful the Windows 10 update came along, and when I finally gave up and went to bed, it was still working. But it appears to be running. We hope. And I hope it stays that way. There should be another new update out long about the 8th, election day of November. And that's to secure a zero-day fault inside the Windows operating system. Google discovered it, and they communicated it to Randy in PA sent me this story. They communicated it to Windows, and Windows was like, ho-hum. But supposedly, Adobe has already fixed the zero-day fault, but Microsoft, you know, they operate on a different time scale. You know the old joke, how does Bill Gates change a light bulb? He doesn't. He just declares darkness to be the industry standard. It's that. Yeah. No, my mute button will not look different on Skype, Steve, because I don't run Skype on a Windows 10 machine. Ha ha! Aren't I clever? Yes. I can't take anymore. And by the way, for everybody who listens to the horn via the Podbean podcast, you know, if you have trouble with Stitcher or TuneIn, you can always get the latest episode at podbean.com, Podbean, podbean.com, just by searching for Head On with Bob Kincaid, the name of this program. And you'll probably see a photograph accompanying this the podcast of God only knows what, because I live a life of indolent boredom in which I run around trying to fix technical issues about which I have a level of knowledge approaching absolute zero. And for all I know, you'll go to find the program and it'll tell you I'm Ben Shapiro, wild-eyed right-wing hack. I assure you I'm not. But, you know, that's how it goes. Let's see. Anything else? You've got a new iOS update to take. I don't know if the Israelis are back to spying on iPhones again or what, but there's a new iOS update to take. I took it today. It didn't seem to be particular. But a quick question, this being a Friday and we just sort of clear out the stacks and clear out the cobwebs and such in my mind. Is Apple Music the worst music streaming platform ever to occur in the human mind? Or is it just me? Because, I mean, and especially after, especially after the latest iOS update, It bites. You know, I've got a little connection cord that runs from the phone into a little jack in the car. Not a jack in the box. Ha! So I can play. And for a couple of weeks, just hasn't worked. And as you know, they screwed up Bluetooth badly enough that we had to go to an Android device for the stress line, which seems to be working quite well now. Crossing my fingers for that. Yes? No? I'm thinking seriously about, music thingy, and I don't know. There's been an update to Amazon Music that looks intriguing. I may go that way. Because Apple Music is just annoying. I don't have that much Apple Music bought, but stuff I don't need to have to worry about. But we're okay. The production computer is running nicely. The official message inside the Horn chat room is, no negative waves tonight. Okay. No, I got all my negative waves earlier today. I was told on Facebook that I don't have sufficient moral principles because I won't vote for Jill Stein. That my morals are somehow compromised because instead I'm voting to keep Donald Trump out of the White House. Yeah, oh well. I guess we'll wait and see. But yeah, we don't have to go into that swamp either. I'm frankly tired of that swamp. I'm tired of arguing about a political candidate who is absolutely irrelevant and could not sell ice couldn't sell ice water to thirsty people in a desert. So that's that. Sorry, Snork. Well, Snork says he's lost the audio. We're still streaming, and streaming nicely, I might add. Asa pointing out, I think Microsoft Zoom is even worser than Apple Music. Does that still even exist? I thought that died years ago, along with like Netscape Navigator and stuff. But oh well. True. Carol Baker pointing out, well, Bob, I voted for a dead guy. There are worse things than voting for Hills. Yeah. And with a similar rationale, that was an effort to keep Crisco John Ashcroft, the man terrified of calico cats, out of the Senate of the United States. Sheesh. But there's stuff to talk about that isn't necessarily the election. How about we wander down Texas way? You may recall the last time we were talking about Texas, we were talking about the Texas Commissioner of Agriculture, Sid Shithead, I think is his name, who was tweeting out a tweet referring to Hillary Clinton as that word that begins with C and ends in T and has an N and a U in the middle of it. See, I didn't even spell it. Ah, I'm on my game tonight. Well, courtesy of the San Antonio Express News, we get the story of an unnamed police officer who has been fired. I'm sure the cop union has filed a grievance. No. Well, he's lost his union representation due to his having been fired, but he does still have the right to appeal, and he'll probably try to get his policing job back through arbitration. There are scant details, but we have enough to know this. This police officer, this public servant, thought it would be real humorous-like to put some feces between two slices of bread and give it to a homeless person. What do you want to bet this Christian is a Trump voter? Ho, ho, ho. Yeah, look at that. Yeah, I give that bum a shit sandwich. City Council was briefed, and Mayor Ivy Taylor said his actions were a betrayal of every value we have in our community, and he is not representative of our great police force. That's the problem, Mayor. He is! Yes! Of course. And sometimes one of the funny things about memory is what triggers it. And this triggered a memory for me. Once there's a little tiny town. It's if you blink on the way through, you'll miss it. Little tiny town in West Virginia called Clay, C-L-A-Y. And it is the county seat of Clay County. Years and years ago, we don't have to use any names here. Years and years ago, there was an old alcoholic man, homeless part of the time. The Elk River runs through Clay, or runs alongside Clay. And down near the Elk River, behind a dumpster, the old alcoholic man would keep a bottle of wine. And everybody pretty much knew it. He was a pretty harmless old fella. Maybe he didn't smell particularly good. Didn't dress particularly well. But, you know, he didn't knife people or stick them up. You know, he might ask somebody for a little bit of change or wander into the diner for a free cup of coffee once in a while. But he wasn't doing anybody any harm. And the police chief thought it would be good fun because, you know, being without a place to really, you know, live, he had to catch his catch can for the basic facilities of life, you know, getting cleaned up, things like that, going to the bathroom. So the police chief of Clay County thought it would be great fun to pour a bottle of castor oil in the old fella's bottle of wine. This he then did. And the poor old alcoholic drank it. And died because castor oil is very, very potent. Ho, 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 look at that. He just messed his pants. I thought about that when I saw this story from the San Antonio paper. In this case, the police officer attempted, they say, attempted to feed what they refer to as a fecal sandwich to a homeless person. Blue lives matter, y'all! Chief William McManus said, "This was a vile and disgusting act that violates our guiding principles of treating all with integrity, compassion, fairness, and respect." The fact that his fellow officers were so disgusted with his actions that they reported him to internal affairs demonstrates that this type of behavior will never be tolerated. The action of this one former officer in no way reflects the actions of all the other good men and women who respectfully serve his community. You know, except for the fact that it does. And then there's the question of, gee, how did this vicious pig, and I don't use that as a reference for a member of the police, how did this vicious pig become a police officer? Maybe there's a flaw in the hiring process somewhere along the way. Maybe, possibly. Just, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, so there's that. What else is there then? A lot. I mean, I could have saved that one for more in Monday, but you know what? By Monday, with the madness we're living in here, I have a feeling we will have no dearth of fresh morans. And why keep one on the warmer for 3 days, right? Clarence with a note, subject line, just punishment, says, "Bob, this is one time I would really like to see that Christian eye for an eye on those two sorry-ass cops." Oh, by the way, the cop in Clay got away with it. Because the old guy was old enough and had enough problems that the medical examiner couldn't say for sure that poisoning him with a full bottle of castor oil was the cause of his demise. Might have just been his time. You know how it goes with the, you know, with the olds, right? Okay, so, yeah, we got that. What else? What else? What else? This is interesting. And, of course, I'm sure that someone somewhere will have a defense to this because, well, it's the Democratic Party, and they're worse than the Republicans. I mean Hillary. You know? I mean, they're terrible. Turns out that Mother Jones has a story. The Democratic National Committee was apparently bugged. Man, everything old is new again. I mean, bugged? Really? Yeah, really. David Korn, who's been doing some Jim Dandy journalism of late, had the story slugged back to Watergate. He writes, "In an episode reminiscent of Watergate, the Democratic Party recently informed the FBI that it had collected evidence suggesting its Washington headquarters had been bugged." According to two Democratic National Committee officials who asked not to be named. Back in September, the DNC hired a firm to do an electronic sweep of its offices. This is after the DNC realized it had had its computers hacked. And, by the way, there is general agreement in, let's see, the Foreign Service of France, the Foreign Service of Great Britain, the CIA, the FBI, that the Russians did it, and then turned it over to WikiLeaks, you know, the hack. But that's okay. That's okay. Big Bad Vladdy Daddy is just misunderstood, and he's being beat up on by that old Hillary, Killery, Shillery, Hitlery,
the devil.
Right. So after they realized they'd been hacked, they thought, what else might somebody do? And lo and behold, they brought the firm in, and the firm swept the headquarters, and ta-da! Now, the first sweep showed not much of anything. But they came back in late October and swept again. This was after noted right-wing ratfucker and formerly accused felon James O'Keefe released hidden camera videos targeting Democrats. Remember when we actually got upset when James O'Keefe slimed Acorn, and Acorn had done absolutely nothing wrong? Yeah, I do too. Well, they did another sweep, and it turns out they found a radio signal near the chairman's office that indicated the presence of a listening device outside that office. The DNC official said, "We were told that this was something that could pick up calls from cell phones. The guys who did the sweep said it was a strong indication." The DNC then turned over a report with the technical details in it to the FBI. The DNC official speaking anonymously said, "We believe it's been given by the Bureau to another agency with three letters to examine. We're not supposed to talk about it." Now, who would ever do such a thing? I mean, never mind the fact that there's a giant Russian cultural center that has gone up in Paris, you know, and because it's affiliated with the Russian Orthodox Church, but it does enjoy like diplomatic immunity. It sits right by Quai d'Orsay, which is where the French intelligence headquarters are, and there are many who think that the domes are probably chock full of digital high-tech, gee-whiz, listening devices. They're just misunderstood, the Russians. Poor big bad Vladdy Daddy. Yeah, I know. But Hillary! Now, this raises a separate issue. It turns out that Rudy Giuliani has bragged in the for-profit media about having influenced the FBI in such a manner as to provoke Comey, Director Comey, into a week ago releasing his incredibly stupid and skeevy letter. Because Giuliani claimed to have influence over FBI agents that he used to work with when he was a U.S. attorney in New York. And his law firm is the retained counsel for the for an FBI officers association. I think it's clear that this, at this point, that the FIB is completely off the rails in a big, bad way. A big, bad, nasty way. And the question is, what do you do about it? What can be done about it? And it's practical as well as philosophical. Namely, if Hillary Clinton is elected, if she is, she will absolutely have the right to fire James Comey. And there's no universe where that wouldn't be the right thing to do. But we must understand that the gang of white-wing thugs in the House of Representatives aren't going anywhere after November the 8th. No, they're not going anywhere at all. And the minute she fires James Comey, they will then fire up impeachment proceedings. And that's part of why I keep saying, listen, I know we're anxious for the election to be over, but even if it comes out the way most of us want it, I mean, we're not counting the third-party dead-enders. Even if it comes out the way that we want it, the madness is not going to subside. You know, in the case of that one in our White House, the Kenyan Muslim usurper, they actually waited until he was inaugurated before they had the secret meeting that I say to this day was probably inherently treasonous, where they decided that no matter what happened to the country, that they would oppose everything he did so as to make him a one-term president. You know, they failed. But in the case of Madam Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary nominee Clinton, they have said before the election is even held that they will not let her be the President of the United States. And nobody is going to punish them at the polls for that because they get their majority from places like Talabama and Louisianistan and Mississippistan and Tennistan. Remember, in Tennistan, they've got a guy who has good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual values, who loves the little fetuses, who was proven to have had an extramarital affair with a woman who he then compelled to have, what? Yes, an abortion. And the Tennistanians sent him right back to Congress, even though they knew that. So we've got that to deal with. And we will be dealing with it. And I'm liking more and more my selection of January the 24th, 2017, as the first date in which the new House of Representatives in the new Congress impanels its first select committee to investigate Hillary Clinton for being Hillary Clinton and thus leading toward an impeachment charge. Or an impeachment. Impeachment is the charge. And it could get really interesting depending on what happens in the Senate. I remember a year ago saying, it's going to be a long ride to November. And under almost any set of circumstances, as of November 8th, 2016, it is going to be a long ride to November 2020. Have you marked the date yet? because I'm thinking we might oughta. I'm looking now, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. There it is. The presidential election in November 2020 will take place on... hold on here. It will take place on the first Tuesday after the first Monday. Isn't that how it works out? So that will make the November 2020 election, mark your calendar now, Tuesday, November the 3rd, 2020. And God only knows, heaven help the mariner, right? Yeah. So, all I can suggest is that we be supportive and caring of each other, and try to provide a safe and sane space for us to discuss what will happen. You know, assuming, and I know that's a big assumption, assuming that she is elected President of the United States. And Lord God, she's going to be plenty busy. But, you know, at least Jill Stein will go away for another 4 years until she pops up groundhog-like in 2020. So we can actually talk about issues instead of, right, yeah. This is the bizarreness with Giuliani, and of course he's kind of an enforcer. Remember his? I haven't seen such a crazy speech like that since Zell Miller went nuts at a Republican convention. Giuliani, you know, shrieking and screaming at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Well, now, you know, he's been caught bragging about the fact that he leaned on people at the FBI to get the Comey letter replaced, and that there's going to be an insurrection. And so the bookers at Chicken Noodle News. Found Mr. Giuliani's contact, and they got old Rudy into the Situation Room with Wolf Blitzer, where much hilarity then transpired. Here we go. I love this new update.
Clear. Did anyone leak any aspects of that Clinton email investigation to you?
Wow, this really sucks.
No. I've spoken to no current FBI agents.
Well, even so, even with
8 months, 9 months, 10 months, certainly not about this. Conversations that I've had have been basically with friends of mine that I work with on mafia cases and Colombian drug dealers and white collar cases. An awful lot of former FBI agents are enormously upset about Comey's decision. You know, back in, what was it, July. They disagreed with it. They thought it was a prosecutable case. So I've had lots of conversations with them, and they've told me a lot about the disagreement between the Justice Department on the one hand and the FBI on the other. But it all comes from former FBI agents, and it's all hearsay. And in that particular situation, I was actually talking about the advertising. advertising campaign that you were referencing earlier.
Oh, crap. Well, that just annoys the bejesus out of me. Let's see if maybe we can do this a little better somehow. There are options. There are always options. Yeah, let's try this again. The first question is pretty straightforward, don't you think? It's just the answer that becomes a problem. And the answer has, you know, weaselage built into it. Here we go. There. Let's try this again. Oh, for pity's sakes.
Clear. Did anyone leak any aspects of that Clinton email investigation to you?
No, I have spoken to no current FBI agents. Gosh, in the last 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, certainly not about this. Conversations that I've had have been basically with friends of mine that I work with on mafia cases, and
which is a far cry from what he actually said before. Now, why would America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani, and really New Yorkers, what were you thinking when you elected that dumb son of a bitch mayor? The reason for the about face is because, what he was so proudly boasting about having done is probably illegal conduct. You know, the FBI is not supposed to take its marching orders from a washed-up has-been crank who is still smarting over the fact that he got his ass handed to him by, you know, Hillary Clinton. Because this is all vendetta on his part. We're clear about that. So let's go back.
Colombian drug dealers and white-collar cases. An awful lot of former FBI agents are enormously upset about Comey's decision, you know, back in, what was it, July. They disagreed with it. They thought it was a prosecutable case. So I've had lots of conversations with them, and they've told me a lot about the disagreement between the Justice Department on the one hand and the FBI on the other. But it all comes from former FBI agents, and it's all hearsay. And in that particular situation, I was actually talking about the advertising campaign that you were referencing earlier that I knew was going to come as a big surprise, and there were about four different formulations.
Oh, it was an ad campaign. Got it.
That we had in mind, and I didn't know which one we were going to use, but I knew one was going to be a big surprise. I wasn't referring to any possible
no, heaven forbid,
information about
I wasn't being felonious or nothing
or that sort of thing.
Because in this letter that has just come out from two Democratic ranking members of respective committees, Elijah Cummings and John Conyers, they say, and they refer to an interview you gave this morning. Let me read the first two sentences from the letter. This is a letter to the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Justice. This morning, Rudy Giuliani, one of Donald Trump's closest and most vocal campaign advisors, appeared on national television. And confirmed that he had obtained leaked information about the FBI's review of Clinton-related emails several days before FBI Director James Comey sent his letter to Congress last Friday about this matter. In fact, Mr. Giuliani went even further and bragged about the information he had obtained, stating, quote, "Did I hear about it? You're darn right, I heard about it." So they're saying that you confirmed this morning you got this leaked information before the FBI wrote to Congress about the new review
Not correct. I've had no conversations with anyone inside the FBI. I have heard for the last 4 months a tremendous amount of information about the consternation within the FBI, the fact that FBI agents were very unhappy
with the way they were being treated by the Justice Department. That's all true. But none of it came from any current I haven't talked to a current FBI agent, as I told you, in the last, at least 8 or 10 months.
But did you?
And so everything those Democrats said was wrong, even though I said everything they said I said. I just didn't say it. Different universe. God damn it, I don't want to go to prison. But I'm not under oath talking to you here, Wolf. So I can lie my nasty, crazy old Trumpansy ass right off.
Did you know, Mr. Mayor, that that Comey was about to make this announcement right to Congress about this review? Because in the interview this morning on Fox and Friends, you seemed to say, "Did I hear about it?" You're darn right, I heard about it. What were you referring to?
Well, I'm referring to the consternation within the FBI, which the New York Times has reported on and the Wall Street Journal has reported on.
Although the question he was asked was not about consternation in the FBI, it was about the Comey letter. Darn right, I heard about it. Yeah. So, this just continues to devolve. As Gerald points out, well, fuck, Rudy, which is it? Did you hear it from a guy or not? Yeah, he's talking to this guy. It's the same guy that's forever handing people charged with theft TVs in alleys. Yeah, this guy gave me this TV. This guy. Maybe the same guy, maybe the same one that Jimi Hendrix was singing about when he said, "Excuse me while I kiss this guy." Yeah. And, taken together with things like bugs in the DNC office, and the fact that the FBI turned it over to somebody else indicates that they don't think that it was like James O'Keefe, although he did try to do that in, I think, was it Mary Landrieu's office in New Orleans a few years back? That's what got him charged with a felony that he later pled down to a misdemeanor. Yeah. Now that would be. Yes. So, the fact that they handed it over to a different three-letter agency. Let's see. FDA? No. USDA? No, that's four. CIA? Yeah, that would indicate that we're talking about some action from, overseas, state actors, that kind of thing. Yes. Yes. Good. Right. Got it. But, Rudy, I know nothing. I know nothing. I know nothing.
That's what I was referring to. I was referring to the fact that, and this has been going on for about 4 months now, this tremendous anger among, and I got it all from former FBI agents, tremendous anger within the FBI about the way, number one, Jim Comey's conclusion, and number two, the way they believe they were being obstructed by what they regard as a pretty corrupt Obama Justice Department, cutting off a grand jury investigation, cutting off subpoenas. I actually didn't get into that detail. I didn't find that out until recently.
So what I hear you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're now saying you did not know that Comey was going to release this information about a review of the Huma Abedin emails found on her estranged husband's computer before he made that official report to Congress.
That's absolutely correct. But I did know that
there was... You had no information about that.
Had no information about that at all. That came as a complete surprise to me, except to the extent that maybe it wasn't as much of a surprise to me because I had been hearing for quite some time that there was a lot of, I don't know how you would describe it, maybe revolution is too strong a word, but a lot of debate and anger within the FBI about the way they were being treated by the Justice Department, and a lot of FBI agents feeling that the Justice Department had been corrupted, particularly with Loretta Lynch's meeting with President Clinton 4 days before the interview, then the
That Wolf Blitzer, he sure is a hard-hitting journalist, isn't he? Yeah, just sits there and drops the nickel in and walks away. But if you sort of dig a little bit deeper into this, you find out, you come to a rather interesting conclusion. All that business about how everybody he knows in the FBI is so angry, about, you know, Hillary, goddammit, Hillary! That tells us something. What does it tell us? It tells us that the FBI, if Rudy here is to be believed, is chock full. There's those chocks again. Chock full of malcontent, white wing, possibly neo-Nazi FBI agents. Remember when the reign of error came to a close and we found out that the Bush administration had salted away a bunch of Republican sleepers, for lack of a better term, inside government? Apparently there's a shit ton of them in the FBI. And when those things start hatching, it gets messy. And I think we have at the FBI, if nothing else, proof that those chickens are coming home to roost. And let's do remember that there's no crime to investigate. The allegations about the Clinton Foundation are merely so much bullshit pumped out by a professional bullshit producer who cut a sweetheart deal with the New York Times and the Washington Post over his gossip book, Clinton Cash. I mentioned that last night. Carol mentioned that last night. And it's best to keep that kind of thing in perspective. Meanwhile, I might add that it's worth remembering that the Republican nominee has rape allegations against him in federal court and will be going back to court on the Trump University scam that he ran on ever so many people. Just, you know, kind of worth remembering. And you know, there's a lot to worry about the FBI. I mean, if these people are full of rat fuckers now, then what? In essence, they're already holding us hostage, demanding that they get their way over the civil authority of government. That's worth fretting about, worrying about. Note coming in from Bill in Helena. Rudy, Rudy, Rudy. You can get away with that. That's not the same as a Bob, 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 Bill. So you're okay. You're okay with Ron and Raleigh. The operative word in Rudy's interview is current. He has spoken with former agents who have spoken to current agents. Slimy bastard. But they have to. But the thing is, Bill, they have to have a mindset that is willing to entertain this anti-American, anti-democratic horseshit. That's what I'm trying to get at. The problem here is deeper than it appears. There needs to be a complete. You remember right before they killed Kennedy. He said he wanted to break up the CIA into 1,000 pieces. The same thing probably needs to happen to the FBI. It needs a thorough house cleaning. The rats and the roaches have got to be gotten out. because those fuckers are supposed to be neutral. Their politics are not supposed to be involved in their police work. But there is nothing, there's no takeaway from this except the fact that it their politics are in their police work, because Rudy is sitting there telling us that the FBI is a cesspool of wingnuts. Meanwhile, Ron in the, is it frozen now? Ron in the frozen north says, we've still got 4 days for WikiLeaks and friends to do some more mischief. If they hold fire, I'd look for them to put more ammunition on the table between Election Day and Inauguration Day, if only to fire up the impeachment committee. Rudy so wants to be relevant, Ron continues. Obnoxious little prick, methinks. Me knows. And he says, aren't purges un-American? Well, I'm not talking about a purge. I'm talking about getting the lawbreakers. You know, a purge is something you do to somebody vendetta-ish for vengeance. I'm not talking about vengeance. I'm talking about getting people who are actually openly flouting things like the Hatch Act and getting paid by we the people to do it. They got to go. And preferably to a place that dresses them in stripes. Asa notes, I understand that the optics of that meeting with Loretta Lynch on the tarmac were bad. Oh, they weren't. They were past bad. They were awful. They were terrible. I remember talking about it. I remember saying that her, you know, robe, purple, frayed, moon stars, appliques, tattered, will thee kiss me in the dark, baby, invisible, glow-in-the-dark paint, right? I remember talking about the fact that that meeting forever compromised her credibility. 'Cause it did, here it is. Asa continues, but don't these idiots understand that Clinton could have just picked up the phone and called her to give her to give her the secret instructions instead of making a spectacle out of it and out in the open? No, they don't understand that, because Hillary! The devil! She wouldn't do something. If she wanted to nakedly wield her massive will-bending power. Right? Yep. So that's how that works. Mm-hmm. Oh, hey, I've got some good news. We have a brand new subscriber. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you very kindly. Stephen just subscribed, and Stephen, you will be receiving a horn bumper sticker. And your first month's subscription just got increased by $16, courtesy of Ralph's and courtesy of Tracy, the lady cab driver. Thank you very, very much. And we've got room for a few more. That if anybody would like to jump in alongside Stephen, thank you, Stephen, very kindly. Meanwhile, Billable Rick is out there laughing somewhere. Oh, and flouting. See, Billable Rick's a lawyer, so Ron in Raleigh, this is a challenge. Bob. LMFAO, excuse me while I kiss this guy. Rudy's such a fucking crazy liar, and not a very bright one at that, just like his butt boys Vlad Putin and Trumpus Nordus Rex. Because that's the other thing that's out there today. Kind of a big deal if we could just get the for-profit media to pay sufficient attention to it. Kurt Eichenwald, we pronounce the W now, yes. Kurt Eichenwald has a new piece out, investigative reporting, in which he points out that Well, the intelligence services of, you know, the UK and France are more than a little nervous about Benito Cheeto's relationship with Big Bad Vladdy Daddy, who he used to brag about knowing oh so well, and then took to saying, I never met the guy. I wouldn't know him. I don't know nothing. Eichenwald's report is well worth the reading. You can find it. I've got it here in front of me. You can find it over at Newsweek. And among other things, he said the Kremlin was afraid that Trump was too much of a loon to win. Meanwhile, America's European allies, Eichenwald reports, have expressed alarm to one another about Donald Trump's public statements denying Moscow's role in cyber attacks designed to interfere with the U.S. election. I mean, France says it. UK says it. Our own intelligence apparatus says it. You remember when other foreign intelligence agencies were telling us that, remember curveball, screwball, you know, dead drunk drinking screw top wine under a bridge somewhere in Prague, who was the source for the yellow cake rumor that led to the war crime that we know as the second Iraq war, you know, Bush War II. Remember when they were telling us, that guy's nuts, you shouldn't believe him, there's nothing to it, it's crap. And the Republicans all says, he's a brutal dictator, tried to kill his own people. Couldn't help thinking about that when I saw this. While American intelligence officers have privately briefed Trump about Russia's attempts to influence the U.S. election, he has publicly dismissed that information as unreliable, instead saying that hacking of incredible sophistication and technical complexity could have been done by some 400-pound guy sitting on their bed or even a child. Remember, he said his little git Baron could have hacked into the DNC. Mm-hmm. Eichenwald reports, when Trump launched into an inexplicable attack on the parents of a Muslim American soldier who died in combat, Captain Khan, the Kremlin assumed the Republican nominee was showing himself psychologically unfit to be president and would be forced by his party to withdraw from the race. Because that happens in places like Russia.
It is time you need to think about maybe going to dacha and pruning flowers.
That's when they put the hacking campaign on a temporary hold. But then, lo and behold, everything turned out to be okay because the Trumpansies don't care because Hillary the devil! Apparently, Big Bad Vladdy Daddy is scared shitless of Hillary Clinton. And this is nothing, I mean, you know, who wants a war with Russia? Not me. But I think he's mainly afraid of her because he knows she won't put up with his shit. And he's got a lot of that. America's European partners are also troubled by the actions of several people close to Trump's campaign and company. Trump's been surrounded by advisors and associates with economic and familial links to Russia. The publicized connections and contacts between former campaign manager Paul Manafort with Ukraine have raised concerns. Former Trump advisor Carter Page is being probed by American and European intelligence on allegations that he engaged in back-channel discussions with Russian government officials over the summer. Page traveled to Moscow, but he denies an inappropriate contact with Russian officials. They're also uneasy about retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, a Trump advisor who was reportedly considered as a possible running mate for the GOP nominee last December. Flynn attended a dinner at the Metropole Hotel in honor of the 10th anniversary of RT, the Russian news agency that's been publicly identified by American intelligence as a primary outlet for Moscow's disinformation campaigns. I'm a little bit less sanguine about the whole RT is Russian propaganda. RT is Russian, absolutely. But there's probably some propaganda in there, but it is not 100%. And you know, there's a lot of progressive folks over there at RT. I mean, Ed Schultz is there. What, Mike Papantonio's gonna get a gig? I don't know. Hartman? Apparently the check's clear. And frankly, the Russians will use whatever information they choose to suit their best interests. If it was in their interest to pump out right-wing horse shit, they would do that. Yeah, Lee Camp's there. Suffice to say, go on and go to Newsweek.com and read the report for yourself. But the upshot is that we have allies who are not, you know, I mean, who are very, very nervous about their own national security based on Trump's behavior. Eichenwald writes, it's known right now, this is absolutely true, that the Russians have gathered both video and audio tape of Trump when he was in Russia. They've done the same thing with Hillary Clinton when she was there. I guess they've also probably got tape of Jill Stein when she was over there sticking the shiv between the ribs of the Greens in Russia. So, according to Kurt Eichenwald, he said the FBI isn't investigating his Russian ties. The FBI couldn't, because that's a CIA job, right? And the fact that Britain and France keep saying, the Russians are doing the hacking, and present evidence to that effect, and it gets ignored. Well. They kind of figure that if Trump's elected, we can't be trusted anymore. And maybe that's part of the motivation, because NATO. Remember how Trump said that, you know, he just didn't, you know, he wanted to run NATO as a protection racket, and that we might not honor our treaty obligations under the alliance treaty. Yeah. I'm sure that would tickle Big Bad Vladdy Daddy to no end. Because NATO has been a thorn in the Russian side from the moment of its inception. Hell, the Soviet Union might have been able to pick off individual European, Western European nations piecemeal had it not been for NATO, and managed to do so without starting World War III. Cold Wars are just lovely, huh? What say we have another one? Yes, two lets. Oh, Lordy. Well, it is, after all, Friday on the front porch, and I should probably stop filibobstering at this point. Right? Yeah, because it's 16 minutes past the hour. I want to send out thanks to Stephen, Laurel, and Clarence for getting us going this evening. We have about $165 to go in fundraising for the evening. Hopefully we'll knock that out before 9 p.m. And that way we'll have a clean slate to work with when we walk into Moran Monday and begin breathlessly anticipating Tuesday. So I don't necessarily know what's on your mind, but I'd like to. I'd like to know what's on your mind. And we will do that in the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. A reminder, we will have an Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable all evening, pretty much, on election night Tuesday. Let people share their voting stories. Of course, many people have already early voted. Early voting is sort of up, although in states where concerted efforts were made by the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-to-mentalist, ammosexual, white wing to keep certain people that they don't like to have vote from voting, it is down in places like North Carolina. Because freedom, right? Right. Okay. Oh, goodness. Choices, choices, choices. And again, if you'd like to help out, thank you for going over to headonradionetwork.com and clicking on contribute. Why do I not have that song? Yeah, well. Yeah, we'll go with this one instead. This is listener-supported conversation radio. If you want to get into the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, now is the time. We'll fire it up. I'm Bob Kincaid. 24 past the hour, Sting from Dream of the Blue Turtles and Children's Crusade. All right, there's been some technical issues. Let's see if they're still there. Sparky, do you hear me?
Yes, I hear you now.
Okay, good.
I had to check my my settings, call settings.
Yeah, it was something sideways.
They were muted. For some reason, once I made the call, but before the call, I could hear you when I was listening to White Rose perfectly.
Yeah, well, the music was actually playing on a different computer that might not be audible across to the Skype connection. Because
I could hear it. I could hear the end of it there.
Okay, I've got good levels coming from you. So I'm okay to y'all.
Yeah, I think so. Can I tell a little story first about the chat room subject that I had?
Go right ahead.
Okay. Could you mute, please? Back when I got out of the Air Force, I moved in with some guys from Ontario, California, in a four-bedroom house. One night we were watching Kelly's Heroes. So when they got to the part where Oddball kept saying to Moriarty, stop with the negative waves, they turned around, they all looked at me, and they said, you look just like Oddball. So they started calling me Oddball after that, because I was still wearing my jungle fatigues. I could still fit in them back then and stuff to go to the lake. I had a pair of cut-off jungle fatigues I wore, and then I had a boonie hat, go to hell hat I wore out at the lake, so that was why they called me Oddball. But I've used that quit with the negative vibes or negative waves line all my life since then. Even when I was working on the job sites with young apprentices and stuff.
Well, it's been kind of hard to avoid the negative waves the last week or so.
Well, I was getting on Steve from Georgia Stan's case yesterday in the chat room. So I wanted to explain it to him.
Okay, that makes some sense.
That's my little story.
Okay. Well,
yeah, he always does, you bastard. That's okay, man. I still love him.
I mean, you know, of course. And was that little thunder I heard in the background there? Pretty sure it was. That sounded like his voice.
Yeah, Laurel's in the room.
Just had to check to see if the microphone was working. I'm listening to you right now on my cell phone. I'm getting no audio from the Skype, though.
Okay.
On your computer?
You might want to type that into the chat so that he can see it, because apparently he can. So what?
Yeah, I got the Skype running on my computer.
Yeah, you can check, hit the call thing on the top of on your toolbar and check your sound settings.
Let's see.
Call technical info.
Audio settings.
Oh, audio settings. Yeah.
Speakers. It's got headphone speakers. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, as I said, I don't run Skype. I don't run Skype on a Windows 10 machine. So,
as far as I know,
no settings have changed here.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably
hopefully
on.
I can figure this out soon. What else?
Hey, everyone.
Hey, Billable Rick.
Yeah, I had to take a little break there. I'm back.
Volume, but I'm hearing anything.
You can't hear me?
Just Laurel.
Oh, Laurel. Okay. Okay. I like your dog, by the way. Is that yours, Laurel?
Yeah, that's Little Thunder.
He's not hearing you, though.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I...
Little Thunder.
Cool.
The reason I go by Golden Thunder on the chat room is... Yeah, I can't hear anybody on the...
Yeah, so it's kind of going to be annoying using the time delay.
Well, it's because of honor of my late Thunder. He was He was a golden Chow Husky mix, and he passed away about a year ago.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah.
It's tough to lose those critters.
Well, I'll shut up for the time being until I get the speaker situation settled in.
Okay. Yeah, Bob, I was looking at Nate Silver's blog, the 538 today.
Yeah.
And the story, I guess, that gave me the sang froid, if you want to call it that, is that Hillary's basically...
all right, speaker's fixed.
Cool. You know, Hillary is basically within the margin of error almost. And, you know, basically, you know, if, you know, 2.5 points here or there, I mean, and then we basically have a tied up election. And, you know, it really scares the hell out of me because, you know, the Republicans, they can't really win an election fair and square, but they sure are good rat fuckers, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, they could... if they can peel away one of the states of the blue wall, whether it's Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, which, you know, seems to be fairly remote, but if they can somehow do that, you know, then we're fucked. Or it could come down to, like, another recount in Florida, you know?
Well, I mean, I'm looking at his map now, and North Carolina and Florida are both very faintly Band-Aid pink.
Yeah, they are.
Here we go with the negative waves.
Hey, it's reality, Sparky. It's a scary time.
Meanwhile, Gerald would love to be in the Skype chat group, but Skype's all screwed up with screwed up for him too. So, but yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot to be worried about. And yeah. as I tried to make clear. It even extends into a Clinton victory. Okay? I mean, that shouldn't... I would hope that that doesn't dissuade anyone from voting. But we're in a cold civil war, okay? I mean, this is not theoretical. I mean, you've got... I mean, I've got what here? Here's a story from a day or so ago. Reuters headline: militia groups prepare for armed revolt if Clinton wins. Last chance to save America from ruin.
Bob, I think it's time. You know, I think it's time for the U.S. military to put down some of those homegrown militant groups. In my opinion.
Well, but the U.S. military can't.
I know they're not supposed to. The Posse Comitatus Act and so forth.
And the problem.
Call the National Guard out.
And the other problem is that, as we have seen, we don't know the extent to which, we don't know the extent to which law enforcement is infiltrated by the same kinds of people. It would appear to be significant. I mean, Jesus Christ, the FBI, right?
Oh, it's a den of, you know...
Vipers.
It's a den of vipers. I mean, it always has been, but it seems like it's pretty bad right now. Worse than usual right now, anyway. And you sort of wonder if Giuliani somehow has some goods on Comey, which basically forced him to come out with this, you know... vague amorphous letter that
or maybe Comey is a loyal Bushy sleeper and has been all along.
Yeah, and maybe his story about how he prevented the reauthorization of the warrantless wiretapping program while Ashcroft was in his hospital bed, maybe that was just to get, you know, in a position of power, let's just say. So, I mean, who knows, but it doesn't, something definitely is rotten in Denmark, as Shakespeare wrote, you know?
I got a suggestion. They've got a whole lot of people up there in South Dakota, North Dakota, wherever it is. They're already organized. They're already there. They already got the equipment, and just gather them up and fly them to wherever the gun-toter rednecks are and leave the Indians up there in the Dakotas. Because they're not armed, they're not trying to occupy anybody else's territory, and leave them be for 6 months while they go clean out the nest egg of the right-wing nut jobs.
But and by the way, it's good to hear from you. It's been a while, Roger. Good to have you back in the room. I'm all in favor of that idea,
But in order for that to work, they have to not be, the FBI has to not be a bunch of damn fifth columnists. And at this point in time, I don't think we can say that, can we?
Well, I agree, but there were two people that turned in their badges because they would not take part anymore in the Standing Rock confrontation. And the Dakota legislature has just requested another $6 million loan from the state bank to pay the costs of all the out-of-state troopers that are there, and it's bankrupting the state of North Dakota. So, I don't know. That was sort of a tongue-in-cheek comment anyhow.
No, I got it as such. But
testing,
but I mean,
testing.
Who's testing?
Steve.
That's me, Bob. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Proceed.
So they're bankrupting the state of North Dakota. I guess maybe North Dakota might ought to raise taxes on the raise extraction taxes on the oil, huh? Ooh.
Well, the reason it's causing them the grief is that they requested mutual aid, and according to the mutual aid agreements, all the police officers that come in from out of state, North Dakota has to pay their salaries, feed them, house them, give them a per diem when they're not on the job, and pay their transportation, reimburse the states that sent them their transportation costs. And, yeah, they've got to raise some money somehow to pay this bill because they asked for them to be there.
Or they could stop. Or they could stop siding with the and being an armed adjunct of the oil company, couldn't they? I mean, there's that. I mean, that's always a possibility, right?
Bob, you're too logical.
There I go again.
There was a protest in Bismarck near the at the state capitol that forced the state capitol to go down.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that, Laurel. And they're down to arresting ministers. Yeah, from many different faiths.
They're shooting journalists, rubber bullets, and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course somebody threw some oil on the state house wall, and wrote, "You can't drink oil." So that's, you know, that provides sufficient reason to shoot some people.
Exactly. How dare you fight the hydrochemical state? Right?
Right, exactly.
Well, I ain't buying this theory that Comey just came out early to prop himself up to make himself credible after the election. By that time, we'll end up with the president, you know,
or fight.
Pence.
Are you talking about Randy Rhodes' theory about Comey, Snark?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of dovetailing on that. But, yeah. He you know, she said that he's propping himself up to be credible. By the time that he comes out and spills the beans, we're going to wind up with a President Pence. We're going to be right back in the same shithole. So,
yeah, I'm sorry, but I think that there's just a little too much wishful thinking in that theory for my liking.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wishful that's going to come out of it. We're still going to be in a shithole.
I remember reading the novel Christian Nation. I can't remember who wrote it. It was about a, you know, fictional historical timeline where McCain had won and died like a month afterwards. Palin took over, but then very quickly was kind of, you know, set aside by the real religious fanatics, and we wound up with a real caliphate here. You know, it was, and it didn't, you know, didn't take much to actually set that whole sequence in motion if you just get the right events to happen at the right time, or the wrong events happen at the wrong time. I mean, it really doesn't take much when you got 40% of your population thinking Jesus is right around the corner. Hello?
Yeah, amen to that.
You're there.
Unfortunately. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, if somebody is sufficiently Machiavellian, They can do any number of things. I mean, I suspect that the FBI is, they've got some guys on the inside feeding stuff to WikiLeaks, or perhaps even feeding it directly to the KGB, which then is feeding it to WikiLeaks. And, you know, Julian Assange is a, you know, is obviously pro-Russian, or at least anti-democratic from what I can tell. And so, yeah, it's a very incestuous sort of a situation. I mean, it clearly is a den of vipers. And, you know, the only way to take care of that is you've got to exterminate the den, let's say. You know, there's no other way around it.
And you have to get Machiavellian in that regard. Machiavelli gets a bad rap anyway. I mean, all Machiavelli did is show the rest of us how the psychopaths act naturally. He's just telling us how to beat the psychopaths at their own game. He's not telling us how to be psychopathic. He's just telling us how to beat them at their own game.
You know, it's been a while since I read Machiavelli, but I don't know that I remember it quite being like that. But I guess I got to reread it.
I mean, it's not like Donald Trump needed to read Machiavelli, although maybe he read He Shall Not Be Named. I'll keep the pool open. But, you know, normal, your garden variety psychopath usually is going to rise to power in a society that rewards psychopathic behavior anyway. You know, they don't need any assistance. Who needs assistance are the morally kind of grounded people like us, who are kind of illiterate when it comes to power and the natural laws that govern it, so that we have some sort of a guideline on as to how we need to act in order to attain the power necessary to set things right. It may not be pleasant, but we can't be totally averse to the concept of power that we just sit around and complain all day while the world goes to shit.
Yeah, you know? Right.
One thing that concerns me is what happens if Ty... Am I correct in that if, in the event of a tie, Congress, the option vote, remember, because they never exercise it for putting anybody into the Supreme Court, but Congress gets the option to pick the president. If they don't pick a president by March 8th, is that the correct date? Then whoever, and while they're choosing the president, the Senate is supposed to be choosing the vice president. If Congress does not tell Senate by the 8th who the president is, am I correct in that Senate, whoever they were going to select for vice president, then becomes president? If they don't select by their deadline, then the Speaker of the House becomes president. Is that the correct options?
Well, I don't know, Snark.
In the case of an Electoral College tie, the election does get thrown to the House, right. And they don't well, have, and they don't, the and they, the and they don't have an
the
option.
House picks the president.
They don't have an option. That language is shall, not may.
Okay, but if they do not come to a
Supreme Court justice too, how long has that been?
Open? Yeah, but if they do not come to a consensus by March 8th, they no longer get the answer. Is that correct?
That I'm not so sure about.
If that is true,
I'm trying to think how many ballots they
again,
went through.
Since I didn't hear it, I didn't know the validity of the scholars that I learned it from, so I wanted to check that out. But if that's true, they could pocket veto in Paul Ryan as president. That's the worst case scenario.
No, I don't. Something about that doesn't ring true for me.
Again, I'm no scholar. That's why I was asking.
That made about as much sense.
Well, I mean, we live in crazy times.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Who could have foreseen the Brooks Brothers Brigade back in 2000? Who could have foreseen, you know, what happened in Ohio in 2004? I mean, there are so many countless numbers of variables that are at play here. You know, it's fun to kind of, you know, game this out, but we're really you know, we're dealing with an incredibly dynamic process. We're dealing with, you know, hundreds of, you know, over 120 million votes being cast. We're dealing with 50 different states, which are, you know, juggling however different procedures for counts and recounts. I mean, there's so many variables that it's really hard to get on top of something like that. I mean, if the Democrats were smart, they would game plan things out so that in case another Brooks Brothers brigade breaks out, they would be aware of what's going on. I'm sure they have, you know, certain contingency plans by now, but, you know, even the most powerful people in the Democratic Party aren't going to be able to foresee exactly what's going to happen.
Well, what everybody needs to do is watch the History Channel program about the 2016 election and Nostradamus' predictions about it. And then it'll answer everything, folks. there really is a show. I'm not joking. There really is a show. I think it's on Sunday night or something on the History Channel about Nostradamus and the 2016 election.
Too bad the world didn't.
Anything for a buck.
Exactly.
Too bad the world didn't take his advice about Hitler. Maybe they could have stopped him. Oh, wait, maybe they shouldn't have stopped him. After all, Hitler built the Autobahn, and the Autobahn is what inspired Eisenhower to build the interstate. And my dad was, you know, going through town helping build the interstate when he met my mom. So without Hitler, I wouldn't be here.
Well, there you go. That's a direct line there. The logic is irrefutable.
Three degrees of separation, not even six, just three.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Well, I have like 3 or 4 degrees of separation from the Clintons, I think. It was it has to do with Heidi Fleiss and or actually Dr. Fleiss. My ex-wife used to call on Dr. Fleiss, who's a dentist, and I forget how it somehow gets back to Monica Lewinsky and then to Clinton. So
I just did a Google search
built with a lot of leftover material from the building of I-5 just for
I just did a thing on what happens if it's a tie. Article 2, now it has to go by the 12th Amendment, which ratified in 1804. House of Representatives shall by ballot choose a president, Senate choose the vice president. However, in the House of Representatives, each state only gets one vote. And so Wyoming counts as much as California, and the Senate does do the vice president. And if neither one of them can do it, then the Speaker of the House is acting president until the ties can get broken. And then the Speaker would go back down to being Speaker, and the person who was president would become president.
I think we're really getting down in the weeds, though. I don't think it's going to be that decisive.
Anyhow, Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr had the problem, and John Quincy Adams became president even though Andrew Jackson had won the primary vote, popular vote. And anyhow, so the statement about the House and the Senate, president, vice president, was accurate.
Well, Bob...
Yep.
Did you see the video of Giuliani on Fox and Fiends 2 days before Comey made his announcement, looking like Nosferatu, saying, "Hey, you know, don't. I've got something, and it's going to be."
Yeah. There's an indictment coming. There's an indictment coming.
Right. Well, that of it in itself is a violation of the Hatch Act. And Don Lemon broke it out on his CNN all over though.
Talking about the red trial. I mean, exactly. The answer to the same as both. Look, this is capitalism at work, even in our politics. Okay, and the for-profit media are operating to their own benefit. Again, back to Les Moonves. Donald Trump may not be good for America, but he's great for CBS.
They won a horse race, and by God, they got it, don't they?
Well, I mean, you got 28 million people who have already early voted and said, "Fuck this." And, you know, now they don't have to watch. And so now they've got eyes back on screens again. The for-profit media don't give a damn what happens to this country. They only care about earnings. And right now they are earning like crazy. And there's a subset to this as well.
Well, and they got me glued to the fucking TV. I mean, I'm guilty as every, you know, as charged.
But there's a sub process here. And that is the fact that news divisions once upon a time were not seen as profit centers.
Right. Back in the Edward R. Murrow and the Walter Cronkite
days. You know, you made your money on your soap operas and Leave It to right. Beaver and, exactly. and Bewitched and the Beverly Hillbillies and Andy Griffith and whatnot. Adam 12. Yeah. But you didn't use the news as a money making vehicle.
It wasn't a private entity.
Well, either. that horse is long yeah. gone out the burning barn.
And the ashes have been blown away.
And so consequently, this is all about making money. This is all about profit.
So what could conclude that we're completely fucked then?
Yeah, kind of.
No. Well, I mean, I know, Duncan. Stay away from the negativity. I hear you, bro. But
and one other thing. I need to bring Jim in Louisiana Stan into the conversation. Are you there, Jim? Jim, you're hooked up, buddy. Well, maybe he'll come on board at some point. Jim, you're on the air. But this is I mean, from the media standpoint, this is about their money. Not their politics. The FBI situation is about their politics. But if the for-profit media can make money out of stirring a controversy about the FBI, well, they'll sell ads on that. It really kind of is that simple.
I may have said this before, but if asses and butts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a merry fucking Christmas, you know?
Yeah. All right, let's see if we've got Jim this time. You there, Jim? Dang it. Hold on here. Okay, we're connected to the Gizmo box. So, I don't know quite what's going on.
Well, I dropped an extra $4.44 in the jar for you today.
I saw that, Laurel. Thank you very kindly.
One penny for each day the hostages were held. That happened 37 years ago today that the embassy was stormed. A little history for you.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
November 4th of 1979. That's when the radicals stormed the gates. So it started 444 days of... Oh... Lots of intrigue that led to Reagan and all that stuff. So,
I believe that was the same day that the Iranian students at Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa, took over Beer Cheer Hall. That didn't get much news. They held it for like 1 or 2 days, though.
Hey, Sparky, I've got to interrupt here. Sparky, I'm getting a note from Scott and Punky saying, what are the chances of getting some info on why it's taking so long to be added to the front porch today?
I thought I added him. He didn't.
He said, I've been waiting 20 minutes to be added to the porch.
Well, I got him.
Well, there. I thought I added him to...
I got through, but I was like, when I called up, it was just dead silent.
That's strange, but you're here now, Jim, so hallelujah, right?
Oh. Yeah, okay, I want to pay.
I'm here now. Everything's cool.
That's after I got on, so.
Okay.
There's Scott. I hear him. Hello, Scott.
Yeah, that's all right. Go ahead, Jim. I just wanted to let Sparky know I got in. I don't know what the deal was.
Probably I can see you're in.
Sunspot.
I I just want to say.
I thought I added you in right after we started.
It's probably the damn Russians.
Or some 400-pound guy sitting on his bed, or Donald Trump's 10-year-old git, Barron.
Hey, wait a minute. I'm the 400-pound guy.
I think it's Julian Assange myself.
I'm not that far behind, man.
I just wanted to say something about that movie Kelly's Heroes. It's chock block full of stars. I mean, you know, they're up and coming at the time, you know, from Donald Sutherland to Clint Eastwood to Telly Savalas and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, that was just, when I saw that movie at 10 or something, that was just the coolest movie. You know, I mean, great reference. I think, who was it, Sparky who made it, you know?
Yeah, it was me.
Yeah.
Because at the time, I looked a lot like Oddball with my long hair and a beard.
That's one of those movies where if I went in to my house tomorrow and it was on, even though I've seen it 150, 200 times or whatever, I can still watch it over again. It's just, it's something about that movie. You know, even the theme song's cool, all the burning bridges, but I guess that's when you're 10 years old, you're easily impressed.
Not long ago, I watched it online. I can watch any movie, old movie I want to watch, anytime I want to watch it.
So I guess I'm the only Green Party person on the fucking phone.
You're probably...
Yeah. I already voted.
You're probably representing the Greens in a higher than actually exists statistical proportion, Jim. So continue.
I appreciate that, Bob, but then why do you seem so worried to always start up your show kind of down in the Greens? I mean, what, you're afraid we're going to steal the votes from our next President Hillary?
I think
it's already a done deal that she's going to get it.
I don't start my show with that every evening, for one. But two, I do receive inquiries about it. And you are by far, you are not nearly as obnoxious about it as ever so many Greens are. They pretend toward a relevance that they simply don't have, Jim. And what gets under my skin, to the extent that it does, is this notion that I'm presented with, that somehow Greens have higher morals, higher principles, better ethics, when in point of fact, they don't even have a basic fundamental understanding of the American political system. And that's bugs me.
Exactly, Bob. It's a product of being detached from the system. I got to meet so many wonderful people in the process of becoming a state delegate this year for Bernie. I got to meet my own congressional representative, Tim Walz, here in southern Minnesota. And don't get me wrong, he's a blue dog from the word go, one of the very last blue dogs remaining. But I got to meet him several times during my process as being a delegate. And he's a decent guy. You know, he's a longtime, you know, National Guard veteran. He's a longtime teacher. He's a state championship high school football coach. You know, he's very affable. He's, you know, he understands where the problems come from. He helped our disabled community by, you know, going through the arm setup in St. Paul to, you know, try to get better services for our disabled, you know, and I learned all that by getting involved in the process. And I think these purists, that they just stay back and don't talk, you know, don't want any input from anybody, and they lose out on that. You know, look, I'm not voting for Tim Walz because he's a blue dog. I'm voting for Tim Walz because the guy that running against him, some freak called Jim Hagedorn, is an outright fascist. You know, my number one responsibility as an American citizen is to fight fascism. It doesn't matter by what tool or cudgel or hammer I use, whether it's a blue dog or a green or what have you. My number one responsibility is to fight fascism. because that's
no,
the
your
one
own
thing
self-interest
that's
is definitely your own self-interest is definitely number one. That's the whole thing about voting, and I mean, you have a choice. I mean, you got to vote for your own self-interest and also the community and stuff like that. And I mean, I'm voting green. It doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter what the color I vote. Just like for you, Bob, it doesn't matter, you know, if you vote green or Hillary. Hillary's not going to win your state, and she's not going to win my state. So, I mean, ergo, I want to send a message to the goddamn fucking corrupt Democrats in this substantial amount, a substantial part of the Democratic Party, which is very corrupt as far as I'm concerned. As far as I've written this with the primaries, and so you know, but my point is that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to vote green, and I might vote green the rest of my life. I mean, I'm sure on one point. I mean,
Jim, you're not going to have a bunch of greens to vote for down ballot.
No,
I know that
because the Green Party. The Green Party just pops up every 4 years and runs a vanity presidential candidate, for the most part.
Let me blow this pool out of the water right now. It's not like the communists that were fighting Hitler weren't corrupt either. Okay? You got to take your allies where you can find them. We did help Uncle Joe beat Hitler. We helped him. Uncle Joe, you know, the guy who starved 20 million Russians to death, we helped him in the process of beating fascism.
The pappy of the Koch brothers went over and helped him build the Soviet oil industry. And then came back and helped and finance the John Birch Society because somewhere along the way he felt like Stalin didn't pay him the money that he was due and owing.
Exactly.
Hey, can we talk about third party candidates? I'm depressed. My favorite third party candidate isn't running this year. Lyndon LaRouche.
Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's 94. I looked up. He's on Wiki. Yeah, I guess he ran every year from 1976 through 2004. So.
Hey, Jim. Jim. Is Jim there?
Yeah, Jim's here.
Okay.
I presume. Hold on. Let me check.
I'm here.
Yeah, there's Jim.
Okay. I've got a thought about both corruption and message sending, and it's this. What if the Democrats to whom you want to send a message, what if the level of their corruption is so intense that messages have no discernible effect on them? What happens then?
Or what happens if there are so few green votes that the message doesn't even rise to the level of a whisper? At that point in time, you know, it's the tree falling in the forest business. And
one wrong move by a President Trump, and guess what? We'll probably have several hundred dead people for every email the FBI just found. Thank you very much.
I got your fears about President Trump, but and I understand him, and I know Hillary, and I'm going to use a Bob metaphor, is just going to bring And I understand the way politics works. But I mean, Bob, sometimes you come and talk like if Hillary gets elected, and you know she's a corporatist at heart. I mean, you don't get to that position. The only person that ever got to run for the presidency that, in my memory, with any chance of winning was Bernie Sanders. And we saw what happened to him. And if you don't think she's made some deals, and I've heard some shit about, like, Social Security, where that's going to be privatized. Watch and see. I don't know if it'll be the first day after she's elected, but it wouldn't surprise me because that's the way these motherfuckers work. As far as, you know, it wouldn't surprise me. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's going to happen, Jesus didn't send me a letter because I'm an atheist, so I don't get any letters from Jesus. I don't know what the fuck's up with that. Maybe y'all can help me out.
Yeah, he's too busy helping wide receivers catch touchdown passes, Jim.
Well, Jim, I get that. I get exactly what you're saying. In my own personal experience, I've used my vote to send a message exactly twice. The first time was in 1980, when I voted for John, God help us, Anderson. And that gave us 8 years of Reagan. And the last time I sent
your vote didn't mean shit to a tree. Because, I mean, even if you talk about Ronald Reagan in 1980, that was a landslide. The people were they were so, the Republicans had succeeded in fucking up the economy so much, and they didn't need much help because we were coming out of the Vietnam War. I mean, do you realize we've been at war for 15 fucking years, and we're in like 7 fucking nations? And what the fuck good is that doing? I'm sorry about dropping the F-bomb, even though we're on the internet.
What I'm saying is, the first time I tried to send a message was in 80, when I voted John Anderson. And the last time I did it was a little bit better, 96, when I voted for Perot. But ultimately, you know, it was farting against thunder. It was audible, but not to the point where it made any difference or made your ears hurt, you know?
Well, wait.
I want to add one more thing in here. We keep using the phrase third party. If you look at the numbers, the Greens aren't a third party. Mathematically, they're like a fourth party.
Bob,
the Libertarians have far more voters than the Greens do. Secondly, I've got a note here from Michael in Madison, and Michael always writes very cogently, and he says this very well. Subject line: Fear of Greens. Are we afraid that Greens will steal the votes from Hillary? Really? Yes. Yes, I am. Remember Florida 2000 and never forget. I realize some will debate whether Nader was a spoiler, and obviously other fuckery was at play. But if the Naderites had voted for Gore, we'd have all been better off. And that's a fact. The Greens are statistically irrelevant in the sense of advancing their own causes or advancing their own candidate. But those statistical irrelevancies can make or break an election for the candidates who actually matter. Again, in Louisiana, probably doesn't matter. But to people in Ohio voting for Jill, they can kiss my ass. Signed, Michael.
Well, Michael, kiss my ass too. I'm still voting Green.
He said it doesn't matter in Louisiana. He's talking about people in swing states, states that actually matter in the electoral process.
Well, here's my experience.
Maybe
the very
if the Democrats
vote...
start listening, we won't have to go Green.
Okay,
but
what?
I don't
what?
Think that's going to happen.
All right, let's
corporately controlled.
Okay, let's take that. Let's unpack that for a minute. If the Democrats would listen, maybe blah, blah, you know, and not blah, blah, but everything else you said. What is it you want them to listen to? Here's the chance. What is it you want the Democrats to listen to and learn?
Get out of these insane wars. We've been in, 14, 15 years. I mean.
Okay, so,
I mean,
let's take them. So let's take them. Jim, let's take them one at a time. Get out of these insane wars. I'm right there with you. Are you under the impression that the Democrats are the only ones in the war?
No. But what if your son came home tomorrow and said, "Look, Dad, I'm so tired of working at Piggly Wiggly or wherever he's working. I'm going to go ahead and sign up." And then, you know, I mean, that wouldn't please you too much, and it wouldn't please me. And, you know, and the next thing you know, he ends up going off. I mean, because I don't see, you know, also let me ask you this. When are these wars going to end? When? Hillary hasn't said anything about it because it's on the back burner, because it's all a volunteer army, which is another reason to bring up the draft again. I remember when the draft went away. I was a little kid, and I thought that was great. But it seems like unless people have skin in the game, they don't give a fuck who dies over in the wars for the corporate America. And if you look at every war we fought since Vietnam, and Vietnam was a corporate war, has been a corporate war. It's just the old Fishtear song from Woodstock. Plenty of good money to be made supplying the army with the tools of the trade.
Okay, but the fact remains that the two wars, Afghanistan and Iraq, were not started by Democrats. They were abetted, let's be clear, because we talked about this a lot. They were abetted by some Democrats, most of whom have expressed regret for having been bamboozled into doing it. Right.
Go on.
Right, including Hillary. And I still think that was a terrible exercise of poor judgment. Something like that. But in terms of getting us out, we withdrew, Obama did withdraw forces from Iraq after the Bush administration could not complete a status of forces agreement.
He had to technically draw them out, and then he put them back in.
Well, we don't have 50,000 people in Iraq right now.
They just put them up. No, technically there's a couple of thousand, I think, put in. I mean, I'm not going to argue the point, but I remember reading that or somewhere. Technically, there's a couple of thousand. I mean, who cares who dies? I mean,
So the Democratic Party platform that was hammered out in Philadelphia has an anti-war plank in it. I know platforms don't matter, but there it is. Next, okay, so what's the next message the Democrats have got to get from the Greens?
Environmental, like what the fuck's going on in, what's that state with the fucking not yet happening oil spill, with the oil drilling?
You talking about Standing Rock in North Dakota?
Yeah, but I mean, like, drill, baby, drill. I mean, let's be more, can you get more Republican than that? I mean, both parties are controlled, but, I mean, watch and see. I mean, do you see the crap they're doing to those?
Okay, so we've got the environment. What's the next message you want the Democrats to get?
Increase my disability.
Yeah, sure. How about lower the Social Security retirement age to 60 instead of raising it to 90 or whatever it is they want to do, 70?
That would be it too. I mean, they're trying to raise that, and then there's talk of trying to raise it to 70.
The fight for $15 an hour. A pathetic, in my estimation, and I thought it was pathetic when Bernie was talking about it too, a pathetic increase in the minimum wage. I want to see the minimum wage up above $20 an hour because that's where it was in 1960.
Technically, yeah, I mean...
Okay, but nonetheless, the fight for 15. Well, the Democrats are on board with that. They're already on board with it.
Well, I'm still a Democrat, but what I'm trying to get to here, Jim,
is that the message you want to send, I think, the message that you want to send is that you want the Democratic Party to manifest more and broader progressive policies in line with people like Bernie Sanders and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Is that a fair assessment?
I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head.
Okay, so how is standing outside the Democratic Party supporting candidates who only run every 4 years out of, vanity going to accomplish that message? All I'm saying is, and this was my experience, for instance, down at the state Democratic convention in June. We crafted the most progressive state platform West Virginia has ever produced. It is now being actively and vibrantly ignored by the Democratic nominee for governor. But we crafted that platform, and we're not going away. And in four more years, we get to stick it in them and really break it off.
Yeah.
Because this is a long game.
Okay, but all right, then I'm going to go to the Desperate Times call for desperate measures. I'm a little bit older than you. I'm 57. If I live another 20 years, good for me. But I'm and also I see that was another thing I heard about they're going to put Social Security into the stock market and watch and see if that happens. I think I might have said that.
Well, I mean, that's what George Bush said he wanted to do in 2005, and he got stopped cold. Remember when he said he was going to spend his political capital?
Right. But if the Democrats do it, and that was something that I read, if the Democrats do it, somehow they seem to be able to get that shit passed. Because then the Democrats and the Republicans, enough Republicans come along, and then everybody, quote-unquote, has their hands clean. Everybody who wants to vote against it, and I know I'm getting kind of conspiratorial, I don't know where the fuck I get that from, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least if that's what happens. Okay?
Okay, but what's the desperate measure?
Desperate measure by whom? By what? The Republican.
Well, you said desperate times call for desperate measures. I mean, there's nothing desperate about the Greens.
Well, there's nothing desperate about what?
About the Greens. They can't accomplish their goals. All they can do.
On one level, you're definitely right, Bob. But a 1,000-mile journey starts with a single step. I could call up stuff like that. I mean, the Republican Party wasn't shit until all of a sudden in 1860 they appeared.
It wasn't quite that magical. The Whig Party had been falling apart for a while, and you had various and sundry other little regional parties that were vying for the corpse of the Whigs. Which goes to something that I've said a million times. There are only going to be two dominant parties in this country because of the first-past-the-post nature of the system. If the Greens were to win an election like Abraham Lincoln did with the Republicans, then they would become the second party.
Right.
There would not continue to be Republicans, Democrats, and Greens. There would be Republicans and Greens.
No, I'm very aware of that. You've been over that several times, and I think to a great extent you're right, particularly for the reasons you have stated numerous times. And I'm very aware, I mean, I'm not quite as aware of the U.S. history as you perhaps, or I can't think of the professor you have on periodically.
Oh, Dr. Bill.
But Dr. Bill, yeah. I'm a little bit more aware of that. I'd say than most people, which probably isn't saying a whole lot. But I'm willing to give it. Like I say, it's really weird. I mean, maybe it's just an age thing, and I'm in fairly good health at the moment and all that shit. But I don't see how the Democrats, except for, they just seem to be Republicans and sheep's clothing to me. And also, here's another thing, okay? One of the big complaints they had about the Bush dynasty, and here we go. We're going into a fucking Clinton dynasty, okay? Now, maybe Hillary's had the golden wafer on her tongue, and she's going to be so fucking transformative. I hope you're fucking right. I don't think so. Okay? I don't think so. But we'll see what happens. Okay? And that's another thing. Rarely does political, the only time I can think of is FDR. Other than another, we never had a three-term you know, four-term president. That's in the Constitution now after the 46, 47 Congress, whatever. But, I mean, are you aware of the fact that, let's see, from 88 to now, you had 12, 20, if you only get in, that's going to be 28 out of 40, 70-some-odd percent, I can't think of that number off my head, but 70-some-odd percent of the time, one of two families have been in control. Okay, and maybe that's a little bit conspiratorial, but, I mean, am I wrong or am I right about that fact? If Hillary wins two elections.
Hey, Jim, I
was going to say real quick, I'm going to back off for a minute. Y'all talk amongst yourselves, okay?
All right. Just to respond to what you're saying, something that is absolutely true is that currently we are not in what you would call the best possible situation, okay? But it's also true is the fact that it is the situation that we're currently in. The two candidates who have a chance to win come Tuesday are Hillary and Trump. And that's just where we are. And never lose sight that it is a long game. I'm 62, so I'm a couple of years older than you and maybe 10 years older than Bob. And I've been at it in one way or another since I was a teenager. And
well, when I got the honor of casting my very first vote when I was 19 years old for Paul Wellstone. Think about that.
Yeah,
and
well,
I knew when I cast my vote that was a rare breed I was voting for. But he was a solid Democrat. He wasn't a Green. He wasn't a fourth party member. He was a Democrat and a proud one at that. What we need are more people like Stone.
Exactly. But my point is, you've got to always recognize that we're in what's known as the long game. And maybe there is some benefit to dead people voting, because even after you're dead, there's going to still be a lot of things yet to be done, you know? And it is frustrating. God knows. There was never anybody more frustrated than me during Reagan's 8 years, and then 4 years of Bush, and then you know, 8 years of W. I mean, Jesus, it was a never-ending source of frustration. But on the other hand, it was like an impetus to not stay silent and just do what I could in any way that I could to affect at least some small change, because out of the small changes, when you put them all together, they can lead to bigger changes. That's all I'm saying, I guess.
Well, speaking of third parties, I remember 1998, where the Democratic candidate for governor, Skip Humphrey, finished third behind Jesse Ventura and the Republican candidate when Jesse won. And both my parents voted for Jesse proudly. And I was voting for Humphrey, trying to convince them otherwise, but nope. They're voting for Jesse, and he got into St. Paul, so not to say it can't happen.
Well, no, I know, you know, and I know. I'm pretty aware politically, believe it or not, but I just reached the point where I don't care anymore about. I mean, particularly in the state I'm living in. You know, maybe if I were in another state where my vote, quote unquote, would matter more. And don't give me that bullshit, every vote matters. Bullshit. And it's just like Bob, I mean, I understand Bob's voting for Hillary. You know, talk about special kind of farts. I mean, that's like me voting the Green Party. I know that. I'm very conscious of that. And that's why the political system's fixed the way it is. That's why it won't change. I mean, you know,
Jim, I need to disagree with the notion that not every vote matters. And the reason I say that is the other night I was watching on YouTube some vintage video of the election night coverage in 1960 when it was Kennedy versus Nixon. And it later came out that Nixon would have won in 1960 if only two votes had shifted in each precinct in the U.S. of A. So votes do matter. They may not always result in the type of thing that we would like to see happen, but they definitely matter. And this time, it's even more true, because more and more I'm thinking, if the Democrats win come Tuesday, it's not going to be a squeaker, but it's definitely not going to be a landslide, unless I'm missing something.
And stand up for what you believe in, even if you're standing alone. That's a quote that is rather contestedly attributed to Sophie Scholl, one of the original members of the White Rose Society. We're all familiar with the White Rose Society now, aren't we? Sophie Scholl herself personally was strung up on piano wire. Okay. Sometimes you have to be willing to take that extra step and actually put your body on the line. It's really easy to sit back here in our comfortable chair with our beautiful dog by our side and all fridge full of food to say, you know, everything's going to hell. Well, we haven't seen anything close to what people in other countries have seen. Okay, we haven't seen the real business end of fascism. Unless you've seen something like that up close, you really can't comprehend what it is to live under something like that. I mentioned earlier, my number one duty as an American citizen is to fight fascism. I was a student of World War II history from my earliest days. I was fascinated by reading stories of that period. Just the wars, the battles, the ideologies that were involved. But it took me until I was in my late teens until I realized just the sheer depravity, the sheer evil that was going on in the midst of that. You really don't understand the consequences of a political decision until you see those corpses stacked up like cordwood. You don't really see the consequences of a decision until you see mushroom clouds rising over cities of several hundred thousand. We need to realize that our own personal decisions, even if they don't seem to matter much to you, they matter. They truly matter. Because trust me, you're not the only person in this world that feels this way. You're not the only person in this world that thinks Donald Trump is a bad idea. You're not the only person in this world that thinks that the Russians have negative connotations in regard to our personal safety. You're not the only person in this world who thinks that going into wars in 18 different countries is a bad idea. You're not the only person in this world who thinks that living a civilized, trying to run a civilization on infinite growth with finite resources is a bad idea. Trust me, your voice matters. Even if the system that you're embedded in kind of sucks, you still have a duty to be active even within that sucky system, because your voice matters. Even if you're the only person in your household, the only person in your neighborhood, the only person in your town that is voicing that opinion, it matters that you speak your voice, because it is what you believe, and what you believe is right. What you believe is right. I do what I do because I truly believe what I believe is right. Okay, and trust me, on Facebook, I've got tons of Facebook friends that are Trumpansies. I don't unfriend any of them, because I want them to know that I'm willing to take this stand. I'm willing to take this stand even if it means I offend people that I've known my entire life. Okay? It doesn't matter that I'm talking to people who may not be receptive to this message. Okay, it doesn't matter that I'm talking to people who think that Hillary Clinton is the most vile incarnation since Charlemagne. I don't give a rat's ass about that.
That would be that the devil.
The devil, exactly. What we need to understand is that there are things that matter more than politics. There are things that matter. There are things that matter more than just abstract policy. Okay? You have to be willing to take a stand. Nobody thought what Martin Luther King was doing was a very good idea. Okay? Look at all the resistance Martin Luther King had to go through. And he was a relatively mild in terms of violence character compared to the Martin Luther Kings and the Black Panthers. Look at all the resistance he got. He took a bullet for this. Martin Luther King took a bullet for this. Edgar Evers took a bullet for this.
No, he took a, Bobby he took a Jack bullet took a for bullet standing for up this. Against the Vietnam War. Okay, he took a bullet for standing up against the Vietnam War. Trust me on that.
I got one little thing I'd like to jump here on in.
Yeah, go,
and
Roger.
That is our local newspaper today confirmed that, in fact, here in Humboldt County, a dead person's vote is going to count. And fortunately, it's a vote for Hillary Clinton. And the lady got her absentee ballot. She filled it out. She signed it. She sent it in. And then died. And the Humboldt County Department of Elections said, as soon as you cast that ballot, it is cast. It makes no difference that the person died before Election Day. They exercised their early voting rights. She was alive on that day, and therefore her vote counts.
As it should.
Yeah, it's
so all I'm saying is that there is at least one case in the United States where a person will be deceased on the actual election day, but her ballot counts. Tidbit of trivia.
Let me ask you another question. I'm just curious, and this kind of has some. I don't know why the Democrats.
Didn't Mel Carnahan win a Senate election in Missouri after he died?
Yes.
I'm not talking about. There was a fellow here. Oh my God, I forget his name. Years and years. Clem Miller was his name. Died in an airplane accident before the election, and the people of the Humboldt Del Norte County, I think maybe even Mendocino and Trinity at that time, elected him even though he was dead, and that called a special election, which gave us a guy by the name of Don Clausen who voted for the Vietnam War and all kinds of other bullshit, a really outrageous asshole Republican. But the fact is, there's been a lot of people that have been dead that have been elected. I'm talking about a woman who was just a very active political woman, very active in the Democratic Party. But she got her absentee ballot, or vote-by-mail ballot now they call them here in California, and she filled it out, signed it, and sent it in, and then she died.
And Wellstone, of course, he died during the 2002 campaign against Rudy Boschwitz. He was flying up north to speak to a rally up in northern Minnesota, up in the Arrowhead region in the Iron Range, and wings iced over, and it crashed. And that was one of the saddest days of my life. You know, the moment that I heard that he had died, that was crushing to me. That was absolutely crushing to me. I mean, I understand. You know, we were up in front enough of it to try and get Walter Mondale on the ballot, but he lost, and Boschwitz took over as senator from the Republicans. But you know, trust me, I it sucks. I remember that day, and it sucks.
Even though I voted for Eugene McCarthy and worked hard for Eugene McCarthy, when I heard that Robert Kennedy had been assassinated, it simply crushed me. And I was in San Francisco at a hotel at the victory party for Eugene McCarthy, and that place just cleared out, and everybody went home because we were afraid of what was going to happen in the streets.
So when Bobby Kennedy died, got assassinated, I remember that night so well. I mean, I remember at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time, my dad said, "If Bobby wins, he'll kill him." So that's what happened. Go with it, what you want.
Well, and with this election, there is room for concern as to what'll happen. I mean, I've got I've had notes from and I've read articles. Look, let's see. Hold on here. Robert wrote in a little bit ago and said, subject line, success of Trump Pennsylvania poll watchers. I wonder how many dumbass white people have volunteered so far to watch the black man's poll places in Philly. Hell, they probably got... And the three percenters and the oath keepers are all out there, and they're all identified as potential right-wing domestic terror... Not even potential, they're domestic right-wing terrorist organizations. And even the FBI looked up and said, this is the greatest danger America faces at present. They're a greater danger at any given time in the United States than any Islamic terror cell sitting somewhere in the middle of the desert in Syria. So there's that. Meanwhile, I got a note from Bob. Different. That was Robert. This is Bob. Another Bob. But in my father's mansion are many Bobs. I have a possible discussion either for tonight, if not too late, or for Monday before the Tuesday election. What, in your opinion, or the opinion of the group, do you think of what would be the actions of law enforcement, not police, if any voting centers were to call in to receive a call and report a suspicious package during voting day? It's given that the place center would be evacuated, taped off, etc. How or what would happen if this was to happen and delay the voting results at the very least? You've seen in the past of polls staying open beyond the closing time due to long lines, the courts and the like. Not saying that it would happen, of course, but given the climate in the country, would you be surprised? Come Tuesday, any number of absolutely, utterly, totally, completely bizarre things can transpire. Meanwhile, Clarence notes, if votes didn't matter, the GOP would not spend massive efforts and money suppressing the voting system in the United States. So there's that. Meanwhile, from places not the United States, Marty reports, my father and stepmother took a trip to India earlier this year. He related to me a conversation he had with a vendor. He wants Trump to win because he wants the U.S. to fail. According to my father, the guy wouldn't accept American dollars. He would only accept rupees. And look, it would be awfully... let's face it. Life would be considerably better for Big Bad Vladdy Daddy if he did not have the likes of a Hillary Clinton keeping a close eye on him. Then this from Steve, a member of the Fraternity of Steve in China, subject line, blah, blah, boom. We can shuffle and jive along the same old road we've become accustomed to with the Hillary Clinton presidency. And that ain't so bad for what it's worth. The usual intrigue of low people in high places, co-opting of the public sphere for private gain, continued privation and violation of the low-bred mob by its world-girdling corporate masters. Steve writes a fine paragraph. At least with that, we know where we are, within the definite lines of the new fascist order. Just look at the citizenry, faces stuck into the haze of a billion smartphones, oblivious to the garbage heap they inhabit, monitored and tracked already by the single heartbeat of each dispossessed disposable body. Nothing else about the times we live in could possibly be more obvious. The rest of the planet, if guardedly, knows this. But consider the monster that is Donald Trump. Such a presidency is unthinkable, a travesty, and an abhorrent slur upon the office itself. Such an abomination pollutes us, even if it constitutes but a more outrageous version of the first and more insidious disaster, a republic in name only. Though some would talk about the straw that breaks the camel's back. Well then, split the damned republic's back, stomp the bastard into the fucking dirt. Could things get so awfully bad? Might the whole apparatus grind and groan and burst into flames at last mercifully to leave us stunned and dazed with nothing else to do but get on with whatever there is left to get on with? I don't subscribe to notions of apocalypse, especially when it comes to the politics of an empire, but the best medicine often tastes like death itself, and blood in the streets has the virtue of clearing the air of mere language.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right in your observation about Dr. King being killed after he came out publicly to oppose the Vietnam War. As a matter of fact, it was like almost a year to the day, if not the exact day, a year later, he gave a speech, a sermon at a church in New York. I think it was the Church of St. John the Divine, if I recall.
Riverside Church.
But Riverside, okay. I knew it was one of those big churches. And a year later, almost to the day, if not the day, he was dead. And again, harking back to the 60s, there was a saying, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. Right now, the problem that all of us should focus on, I think, is that Trump not be elected. Within reason, no matter what we've got to do or not do to cause Trump not to be elected, that's the nature of the problem. Based on the outcome of that, then we go on to whatever the next step is. I honor you for voting your conscience, because there are a lot of people who either don't give a damn to the point that they are willing to vote, or there are people who are like automatic pilot who vote without thinking. At least you're putting some thought into it, and I applaud that. That's an important part of the process.
If I can interject here, there's a post that I put up on Democratic Underground right after Super Tuesday, when I had voted for Bernie in the Super Tuesday primaries in Minnesota. And I just want to give this post to you as sort of a snapshot as to how I felt. Because understand, I'm voting for Hillary, not because she's a great person, but because I'm fighting fascism. And that's the bottom line. But don't forget, let's not mince words. This revolution is still running. This revolution is still going strong. We just need to find our footing. If you can give me a few moments, I'll read this post out to you, and I'll let you make of it what you will. Revolutions don't revolve around numbers. They never have, and they never will. They are the pure essential spirit of progress. And they have the tendency of succeeding even when no one thinks that the success is possible. Consider the following. The American Revolution didn't have the support of a majority of Americans. Less than a decade before, Thomas Jefferson stated that it was the goal of every American citizen to be a good and loyal citizen and supporter of the crown. A good and loyal citizen and supporter of the crown. During the Civil War, the lives of black people in the North were nearly every bit as hellish as they were in the South. Bands of bounty hunters chasing down escaped slaves operated freely throughout the Union right up to the day that the Emancipation Proclamation became the law of the land. Acts of lynching of black people in the northern cities of New York, Boston, Chicago, and Philadelphia increased dramatically during the conflict. A German pastor, speaking at a protest at the Berlin Wall the morning of November 9, 1989, said that it was his dream to see that wall come down sometime during his lifetime. The Berlin Wall opened to full travel that very same evening. I voted for Bernie Sanders on Super Tuesday yesterday. The delegate count doesn't matter to me. His losses in Massachusetts and the South don't matter to me. Hell, even the fact that I voted for Hillary over Obama in 2008 doesn't matter to me. I voted for Bernie Sanders because it was simply the right thing to do. Okay, then. To the Hillary supporters, please understand something. If it were up to Bernie, he would just as soon stay in his humble role as a faithful and dedicated senator from a small state and stay out of the limelight. Hillary Clinton has been passionately running for president for over a decade. She has coveted that position in the White House since the day her husband took the oath in January 1993. Make no mistake. That woman has worked her tail off for the past generation to achieve this goal, and there are very, very few people in this country that can make a credible claim that they deserve this job more than she does. Bernie, on the other hand, is running for president because we literally forced him to do so against his will. He said no 1,000 times before that essential spirit of true progress finally coerced him to say yes. Bernie relented because he knows that this is not a campaign. This is a revolution. And this is a revolution that I'm truly honored to be a part of. And as a Democrat, I feel that I owe it to all of Hillary's supporters to bare my soul to you so that even though we strongly disagree, you will get the full explanation that you deserve. I am willing to reach out to you to get you to understand where I'm coming from. This revolution truly frightens you. Given how the Republican Party has now become a fascist criminal organization, I truly understand the fear you feel. But there is one and only one path that will lead to the defeat of fascism in the United States of America, and that is the path of true progressivism. The only time in my life I ever cast a vote that made me feel as proud to be an American as the one I cast was for Bernie yesterday, as Bernie yesterday was the very first vote I ever cast as a 19-year-old way back in 1990 for a man named Paul Wellstone. I was honored to do so again in 1996 and would have been doing so to this very day if not for the fact that Paul boarded a plane in October 2002 heading north. And 8 hours later, I was crying. Those burning tears I wept back then have become the burn I feel today. Myself and millions of others have taken Paul's broken wings, and we've given them to Bernie. And whether he soars for 2 full terms or only 2 more months, my fellow revolutionaries and I are blessed to watch Bernie fly. My God, how we love to watch him fly. And you know what? He's still flying. It may be Hillary on that ballot, and it may be Hillary's name that I mark, but his revolution is still flying today. And I want everyone within the sound of my voice to understand that.
I hope you're right, okay? I'm a little bit more skeptical. I'm not saying you're wrong. I hope you're right. I hope y'all are right. I hope I'm the loon yelling at the moon, at the half moon or quarter moon, whatever the hell it is. But I got to throw in a little Joe Ramone. I don't think so.
Look, are there things that can go wrong? Look, we're embedded within a collapsing ecosystem. You know, the global agricultural system, thanks to methane-driven climate change, is probably going to collapse pretty hard within the next 5 years. Just talk to the people in India. They can't even keep their farms alive. They're killing themselves so fast. Trust me, it's not like I don't think things can't go sideways. But we have to understand principle here. We have to understand that we are in this for more than just an election. We're in this more than just a popularity contest. We have to understand that, and again, I hate trying to think like I'm going over my head here, but we are in this for humanity's sake. Okay, we're in this so that some form of a civil and just society can last beyond civilization's urge to try to grow infinitely on a finite planet with finite resources. I understand what we're up against. I understand our odds are long, but I'm not just going to pack it in and say, well, fuck, everything's going to hell. I might as well sit at home and watch porn all day. I'm sorry. I'm 45 years old. Porn doesn't even work for me anymore. Okay?
TMI.
We have to stand on our principles here. You know? Sorry about that, Bob.
I understand what you're getting at. The problem is, you know, if you wind up with Benito Cheeto in the White House, Bernie's revolution is dead.
Exactly, and I'm voting for Hillary because of that. Like I said, my first
frankly, it may be anyway because I don't know. It remains to be seen. But you know the phrase was used.
Why would he be dead anyway?
Because it could very well be that a lot of Bernie's revolutionaries are members of the fighting Facebook keyboard brigade.
I remember Hillary said we don't need Hillary people saying we don't need you. I distinctly
remember I went to the news site that sprung up supporting Bernie, and it's pretty much an all Jill Stein. It's pretty much an all Jill Stein brigade over there. It's like, do you not realize the big picture here? Do you not realize how hard progressives are going to be able to function? Just as citizens, let alone a movement under.
Hold on, Laurel. Now, what, Jim? What?
I'm not talking about last week. I'm talking about 6 months ago when the campaign was still going.
Yeah.
And Hillary was very. The campaign. I'm not saying Hillary personally. I don't know. You know.
It was a campaign, and it was ugly.
We don't need you.
Primary campaigns are.
If you're not with us, screw you.
Primary campaigns are ugly. Bernie himself said, if somebody hacked my email accounts, they'd probably see my campaign workers saying some pretty nasty stuff about Hillary.
Dude, I'm very aware of that. I'm very aware of that.
I mean, it was a campaign, and campaigns are.
I know that.
Campaigns are spirited, and then you know when it's over, you try to get the next best thing.
Yeah.
I mean, if Bernie had been the nominee, Hillary voters would have been trying to get the best next best thing.
Hey, Bob.
Yes,
I think I've got the answer.
Okay, 42?
No, even better than that. Earlier, Billable Rick was talking, I think it was talking about the prophecies of Nostradamus. Here's your prophecy for what will happen Tuesday.
Okay.
The so-called Redskins rule. Do you know this one?
No.
If the Redskins win their home game right before the election day, the party that is incumbent will continue to be in office in the next term. And it's only been wrong twice since 1932.
And
2012.
And
right?
The one time it was wrong was 2004.
Overtime.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got the. Where's the graphic? I had it up a minute ago. Okay.
What?
It was wrong in 2012.
Oh,
and it was wrong in 1932, but otherwise it's been accurate.
Okay, there was another rule that was out there that was right, and then was wrong in 2004. So I must be thinking about something different.
Hey, Bob, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hey, hi, guys. How you guys doing? Listen, this is a seriously impassioned conversation.
Yeah, it is.
And the only thing I want to interject, I've been listening. I have, you know, after a lot of thought, see, what Bob is saying about this third-party thing, I think you look at the system, the way our system is set up, it's really only set up for two parties. It's a bicameral system, really. I mean, it's just set up for two parties. So what we have to do is co-opt. We have to turn the Democratic Party into what it's supposed to be.
Right, and you can't do that. You can't do that over in the weeds.
Right. That's why we have to vote down ballot. We have to get people in there because at the end of the day, these people are not going to nominate anybody for Supreme Court, which means that a lot of decisions are just going to get bounced back to regional, like the Fifth Circuit Court where I am, or, you know, wherever it's emanating from, that decision is emanating from, which drives us back into regionalism, which is
sectionalism.
Right. And sectionalism. Right. Yes.
Yeah. Along the lines you've been discussing, one way the so-called Tea Party has gotten so much power from the Republican Party is they followed that model. They basically, you know, infiltrated the party from the low levels and started getting positions of power, and then they can basically control the party effectively, even though it's a minority.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they didn't run off and join the libertarians and sit around smoking dope with Gary Johnson.
No.
No, they got busy. See, that's really, even though I hate to admit it, those people knew how to work. I mean, they had help from the Kochs, but they knew how to generate the fervor and organize. because even if Hillary gets in, we are not, you know, maybe we'll have the House or the Senate. It's doubtful. But you see, and look at Bob, you were exactly right about Comey. He's a slime ball. But remember, the FBI, they've always been right wing. Always. Always been right wing.
Yeah, that's kind of what's, you know, since when? Since when do we get all misty about the FBI, for Christ's sakes? And hey, well, I hate to
go ahead.
I hate to interrupt, but this is necessary. Ralph's jumped in and kicked in her portion of the of the bonus for the new for our new subscriber Stephen. So thanks, Ralph's. And that leaves us at $144 in fundraising to finish the week, you know, even. $144 is, oh, Jesus Christ, two at $72, or, you know, 10 at 1440, you know, ciphering, right? But the bottom line, the bottom line, yeah, 12 at 12. Hey, there's that.
436.
But yes.
All right.
350.
Okay. Thank you. Well, not really. That's more than 144.
we'll take it.
I'd be happy with that.
How about 50, Bob? I'm going to throw in 50.
Are you down for the 50, Rick? Thanks.
I'm down for the 50. Yeah.
And so that'll take us down to $94 to go. So that's. And I'm sorry to just jump in with that, but it kind of had to be said. Because it sucks.
I've got
having holes in the ground.
I've got a quick FBI anecdote if you want to hear it.
I just want to say I hope I didn't disrupt the show too much or ruffle anybody's feathers.
No, it's
my view, and I was just speaking it, and I still pretty much buy it. I'll take your food for thought, but I'm in Louisiana, Stan. So I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
Yeah, being in Louisiana, Stan, the down ballot Democrats need your damn vote. I mean,
I'd like to jump in.
I know that you've already. I'd like to jump in
real quick with just a
okay. Go snort
back on the possibility of an offensive package showing up at a voting place. I don't think they're going to let Anthony Weiner go anywhere.
Wait a minute. Let's see. Yeah, that's a somewhat limited cowbell snork.
And they're going to keep his phone far away from any polling place as well.
You know, I think he should just be exiled to an Amish farm.
There you go.
And kept far, far away from the livestock.
But the Amish elders just endorsed Trump.
Did they really?
Yep, and they've requested all the Amish people to vote for Trump, and according to a Facebook post, it guarantees a Trump win.
Yo, that's terrible. You know how many Amish people live in Pennsylvania and Ohio?
Like it's 1859.
Do you know how many Amish people are on Facebook?
How many?
I don't. They're Luddites. They're not supposed to be on Facebook. Yeah.
Hey, there was an Amish song that Weird Al Yankovic did. I like that one. I forget what it's called.
You be careful among the English.
Yeah.
Amish Paradise.
Amish
Paradise.
God. That's a great song. You got to play that sometime, Bob. Maybe Monday night.
Were you serious about the Amish, though? Seriously.
Yes, I'm also serious about the Catholic Church in San Diego that last Sunday passed out flyers that said, if you vote for Hillary Clinton, you're condemning yourself to hell.
Well, how about if we condemn the Catholic Church to hell, Roger?
Hey, how about if we just tax the goddamn churches?
Bingo! Wait a minute. Yeah, it don't always have to be funny. Sometimes relevant works, too.
Yeah.
If churches want to involve in politics, then they get to pay taxes. If they just want to have a little church and deal with their sky god and pass out little flat wafers that have no yeast in them and drink wine, then fine, let them do that. But if they want to be in politics, tax them.
Yep, otherwise, fuck off, right?
Let us understand the power that's necessary to make that happen.
Well,
the power to make that happen.
Yeah, we need to get the progressives in office. Okay. We're back to square one at the beginning of the program.
Yeah, which is kind of fit, which is kind, which is kind, which is kind of, which is kind of fitting because we're done. it's 9 o'clock here in the Eastern Daylight.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, y'all. Thanks for jumping in.
Good night.
Thanks.
You made it a very, very scintillating discussion, and I, for one, appreciate it. Look, I mean, this is what it's all about. This is how it's supposed to work, and I do appreciate it. And so, with $94 to go in fundraising, I will thank you all and bid you a happy weekend, and say always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.